Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 172nd edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, where we explore and analyze the latest news in Iowa politics. We're glad you're with us. I'm Mike Murphy, joined by Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Welcome, Laura.
And here, Mike.
Good to see you again. This week we'll be talking about more bills Governor Kim Reynolds signed. Iowa missed out on a major federal grant and a state Supreme Court decision related to Iowa's open records law. But first, the federal government informed Iowa leaders last week that it will sue to block one of the state laws Reynolds and Republican legislators recently enacted. Laura, what's behind that law, and why does the federal government want to block it?
We had a little bit of a role reversal going on, because lately it's been the state of Iowa and other Republican-controlled states suing the federal government, and this is the first time the Biden administration, Justice Department, wrote to Iowa leaders warning them. This is about one of the immigration laws, the main immigration-related law that the Iowa legislature approved this year. It makes it a state-level crime, what's called illegal reentry, which would be somebody entering Iowa after they had already been deported from the U.S. or denied admission to the U.S. And it's modeled on a Texas law that has been challenged, and there's a decision that the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals has a pending decision on that Texas law. There are a lot of questions about how the Iowa law would be enforced. But the main thing the Justice Department is concerned about is that under the Biden administration's view, the U.S. Constitution gives the federal government authority to enforce immigration law, and that's not a power that the states have. So that is going to be the basis for the Justice Department lawsuit, assuming that the Republican leadership of the state doesn't voluntarily suspend the law from going into effect.
I see.
I should add also that there were protests last week about this law, that Latino advocacy organizations held protests in five different Iowa cities. There has been a lot of concern in the Latino community in particular that this law, if it's allowed to be enforced, is going to make people very fearful. Fearful to cooperate with authorities in any way. And in fact, some local police chiefs have said that they're very concerned that this law could undermine their efforts to build community trust, because people are not going to come to the police to report a crime or help them solve a crime if they're worried that the result might be that they or someone they love could be deported.
So the state of Iowa has joined many lawsuits challenging President Biden and his administration policies during the past 2 years. What are the most recent ones?
Now, there were several that Attorney General Brenna Byrd joined during the legislative session that we didn't have time to discuss on the show because there was just so much legislative news. But the most recent one was just last week that Attorney General Byrd co-led a 21-state coalition. This is challenging the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms new rule related to gun sales. This is attempting to close a loophole that allows currently a lot of private gun sales can happen without a background check. And from the perspective of the Biden administration, they're saying that they want more people who sell guns to register as federal firearms dealers, and then they would be subject to a number of regulations, including background checks. The group of states, including Iowa, is claiming that this could force Iowans to register as a firearms dealer, even if they just wanted to sell a single gun to a family member. So they're going to charge that this is an unlawful restriction under the Second Amendment. In April, the Attorney General joined a lawsuit. This one involved 25 states to block an electric vehicle rule that's related. The Biden administration is trying to require that nearly 70% of total car sales in the U.S. would be electric vehicles by 2032. And that would be a huge increase, because last year there were only about a little over 8% of total American vehicle sales were electric vehicles. Now, I should say that the U.S. automakers have already said that they are going to be transitioning toward manufacturing and selling more electric vehicles, but this federal government regulation would seek to speed that up, and that's something that the states, the Republican-controlled states, are saying that that's an unlawful mandate that would force Iowans to buy cars that they don't want. Another policy or another lawsuit that was from earlier this year. This one had a small result in early April. It's still pending, but a number of states had challenged the Security Exchange Commission mandate that forces businesses to track and report greenhouse gas emissions. So 25 states are challenging that mandate. And so far, I mean, the court hasn't decided the merits of that, but it has said that the SEC won't be able to enforce that rule while litigation is pending. So Attorney General Byrd declared victory, saying that they had temporarily at least blocked that Biden administration policy.
So, are these what you'd call class action lawsuits because they're involving multiple states or?
It's not quite the same as a class action lawsuit that would involve like a group of consumers who were harmed or a group of patients who were harmed by something, but it is a multi-state lawsuit. And it's the reverse of what we saw under Brenna Byrd's predecessor, Tom Miller. He had joined a number of multi-state lawsuits challenging Trump administration policies, and it became a very contentious issue with the legislature. And in fact, the legislature threatened to cut his office's funding if he didn't stop suing the federal government. But of course, Brenna Byrd ran for office on a pledge to challenge the Biden administration in court. And she even had that in a TV ad, basically, I'll see you in court. And so the legislature has actually increased the attorney general's office funding and allowed them to hire more staff to work on these lawsuits. I should say that in many of these types of cases, one state or a couple of states will take the lead in drafting the complaint. And so other state attorneys general might sign on, but they might not do the bulk of the work in drafting the legal arguments.
So, most of these involve other states, but is there any chance where Bird flies solo?
I haven't seen anywhere she's gone solo. There have been a few that were, I guess there was one where she filed a lawsuit against TikTok, but that was one that where Iowa was the only state, but that was because she was challenging their compliance with a state law. So she was challenging it in state court rather than federal court. But there are different coalitions of states. I mean, some of these lawsuits may have only 12 or 15 or 20 rather than 25. But I in terms of the federal lawsuits, I haven't seen anywhere Iowa was going it alone.
Okay. Anything else we want to cover on that, or should we get to more news related to the Iowa's legislature's work?
Yeah, let's deal with some of the continued fallout from the legislative session.
Okay, so Reynolds signed a major tax bill last week.
Yes, this was the largest, the most significant tax bill that the legislature approved. This was a mostly party line vote in both the Iowa House and Senate. It accelerates, there were a lot of moving pieces to it, but the most important parts, it accelerates the income tax cut that was passed in 2022, where the legislature moved Iowa to a flat income tax rate. And it accelerates the move up to that. And it also lowers that rate from 3.9% to 3.8%. And the governor said every Iowa taxpayer is going to experience significantly lower rates as a result of that tax cut. The Democrats in the legislature have pointed out that about 500,000 Iowans don't earn enough money to pay state income tax. And so the state income tax cut is not necessarily going to affect the people who don't pay income taxes. In terms of how much money this is going to cost, it is quite significant in the for the fiscal year that begins on July 1st. This will reduce state revenue by an estimated $328 million. And for the following fiscal year, so that would be the one beginning in July 2025, that would be about a $605 million reduction in revenue. So we're looking at close to $1 billion in reduced revenue over 2 years. Of course, Iowa has been banking pretty large surpluses. The legislature has been spending far less than the projected revenue, but part of what's allowed the state to do that is that there's been a lot of federal money coming in through first through the CARES Act, the pandemic relief, and then following that through the American Rescue Plan. And that American Rescue Plan money is going to mostly dry up by 2025, 2026. So these tax cuts will continue at to be costing the state quite a lot of revenue. And I think that that's something that observers are going to be looking at, particularly after 2026, to see if this is going to be sustainable for Iowa.
So, what else did the governor sign last week?
Well, there were a few bills that were, we'll start with one that was very contentious, that was a ban on guaranteed income programs. This was something that Democrats were pretty upset about. The thing that inspired this bill was it's a Central Iowa program involving Polk County, Dallas County, Warren County. It's called Uplift, and it's an experiment where a little more than 100 people have been receiving $500 a month, no strings attached. It's supposed to continue for 24 months. And the idea is it's just a pilot program to look at how this group of people fares, what they spend the money on, how they do with compared to people who have a similar socioeconomic situation but are not receiving that extra $500. And Republicans were very upset about that. Steve Holt, who is a state representative from the Denison area, he said that these types of programs are socialism on steroids. So what's going to happen is that starting in January 2025, local governments will not be allowed to participate in any kind of guaranteed income program that doesn't have a work requirement attached to it. Now, this Uplift program in central Iowa is going to continue through the planned end in May of next year, but it'll just continue with private funding rather than local government funding after next January. So that one was very contentious. There were a couple of non-controversial bills last week that Reynolds signed last week. The legislature had given final approval in April. One of them is related to insurance coverage for what's called biomarker testing. This is useful for certain types of cancers and also some other diseases and conditions, autoimmune disorders, and preeclampsia is another one. Governor Reynolds mentioned after signing the bill that her husband, the first gentleman, Kevin Reynolds, when he was diagnosed with lung cancer last year, that he had personally benefited from this biomarker testing. And this is going to require insurance companies to cover both public in terms of the Medicaid program and private insurance to cover this kind of testing for conditions where it's been shown to be clinically useful. And this is the idea is that this will be good for patients. And the floor manager in the Iowa House, a state representative Brian Losee, mentioned during the debate that this should actually save money because if you can tailor the treatment to the specific biomarker, it can end up costing less. And that's what some of the early research has shown on this. The other non-controversial bill, this was one that passed both chambers unanimously, requires certain types of health insurance policies to cover supplemental or diagnostic breast examinations. So already under the Federal Affordable Care Act, in health insurance has to cover routine mammogram screenings. But regular mammograms don't always uncover tumors, particularly for women with dense breast tissue. And there are other women who have perhaps maybe they've had genetic testing that shows they're at higher risk of breast cancer, or they have a close family member who's a breast cancer survivor. And so this would require coverage of additional types of breast exams, including an MRI, for instance, and that, or a kind of a more advanced type of mammogram. So this doesn't apply to the Medicaid program. It only applies to certain types of private health insurance. But the Legislative Services Agency estimated that about 800,000 Iowans have health insurance that's going to be subject to this new mandate. And so that was another bill that the governor signed last week.
Okay, and so as far as the Iowa cancer rate, I read the Yonder report that we aired last week. They mentioned that cancer is going up and is significantly higher in rural areas throughout the country than in urban areas, and they also said the same thing about Parkinson's.
Yes, and that is the Iowa Cancer Registry's Cancer in Iowa report that came out earlier this year. It had the cancer cases and cancer rates at the county level as well as at the statewide level. So Iowa has the second highest cancer rate overall in the country of states. And also is the cancer rate is rising in Iowa in a statistically significant way. And in rural areas, some rural counties are seeing significantly higher cancer rates. And so that has led to some speculation and calls for further research to find out whether any of that could be related to chemicals, agriculture, chemicals that people are more exposed to in rural areas than urban areas. But this biomarker testing has been shown to be useful for several of the types of cancer that are the most common. Breast cancer is the most common diagnosed in Iowa, followed by lung cancer, and I believe colorectal cancers. And all of those are ones that can be treated in some ways that it, for some cases, the treatment can be tailored depending on the biomarker testing.
It's 16 minutes after the hour. If you're listening to us live and you are in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your front row seat for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Mike Murphy with Laura Bellin. A reminder, this program is also available as a podcast. Just search for KHOI's Capital Week on your favorite platform, be it Apple or Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify. And there we are again. It's KHOI's Capital Week. Moving on to other state government news, Iowa missed out on a major federal grant for solar power, Laura. What's the backstory there?
This is called the Solar for All program. It's one of the grant programs that was created through the Inflation Reduction Act, which Congress approved in 2022 and President Biden signed. So the Environmental Protection Agency is administering this grant, and they announced on Earth Day, they announced $7 billion worth of awards. 60 different projects around the country were funded, and Iowa was one of five states that had submitted a grant application but did not receive any statewide funding. So Iowa's Department of Economic Development Authority had submitted a $75 million proposal that would involve utility-led community solar projects. And really, the focus of most of the projects that got funded was more of residential solar, what's called distributed generation, so rooftop solar that would go more directly to benefit low-income families rather than utility-led programs. So all of the states bordering Iowa did receive tens of millions or will receive tens of millions of dollars of funding, and Iowa is out of luck on this grant. Some people I talked to in the environmental community were critical of the state for having a focus more on utilities. And also, someone from the Building Trades Council mentioned that Iowa's project didn't involve any labor union participation. And looking through the projects the EPA funded, many of them involved collaborations with labor unions and registered apprenticeships programs. So that was possibly one reason why Iowa's grant didn't get funded. Some Iowans may still receive some assistance with rooftop solar because there are a couple of multi-state nonprofits that did successfully apply for some of this Solar for All money, and Iowa is among the states that those nonprofits are going to be targeting.
Sticking with state government, we briefly mentioned his intent to do so on last week's program. State Auditor Rob Sand held a news conference last week to discuss a workforce issue.
This was an interesting example to me. I attended this press conference, and I feel that there's so much tension between Auditor Sand, who's of course the only Democratic statewide elected official, and Governor Reynolds. And this is an example where this was a report that was done with the help of a nonprofit group that has worked with other states to increase the ability for people to get jobs without having a four-year college degree. And so they recommended removing certain requirements from 28 different positions in state government, including certain types of specialists, administrative assistants, and so on. And so Auditor Sand said that he had already implemented something like that in his office, that there were certain jobs that they were no longer putting in the job listing that a four-year degree was required, and that he was recommending that the State Department of Administrative Services do this as well. And this is, to me, I was struck by the fact that the The governor's office issued a statement that said basically, like, we're already doing this. Only 10% of state jobs require a bachelor's degree now. And the Department of Administrative D Services said, oh, well, the governor already told us to look at this and we're working on it. Instead of responding in a way that said, oh, this sounds like something we can all work together on. I
Right.
thought it was interesting that they reacted in a sort of hostile way when it seemed to me like everybody basically agrees that this is a good idea to address a workforce shortage, which, as Rob Sand mentioned, it does affect government jobs as well as private sector jobs.
There was also some news last week related to the State Department of Education.
So, just briefly, the Department of Education announced that they had been incorrectly calculating high school graduation rates for about a decade. This was related to the way students who moved from one district to another were coded. And so it affected the rate. The rate for the class of 2023, the graduation rate is 87.5%, which what might sound like a decrease since last year it was close to 90%, but is actually a slight increase because when they adjusted last year's rate, it was 87.4%. So in any case, they're going back and they're correcting some of these graduation rates from past years to take this into account.
Okay, moving to political news. The Iowa GOP held its state convention over the weekend. Take it away, Laura.
This was early. Usually the state conventions happen in June, but the Republican Party of Iowa went ahead and held that. So this was really a show of unity behind Donald Trump. The current Republican National Committee members, Steve Scheffler and Tamara Scott, were reelected. Several speakers, including the state party leader Jeff Kaufman, talked about how the focus of his work is going to be doing all that he can to get Donald Trump elected president again. Three of the four members of Congress from Iowa were at this event. U.S. Representative Randy Feenstra, who of course represents the 4th District, including KHOI's listening area, he missed the event while recovering from outpatient surgery to deal with a blood clot in his leg. But according to his office, he is recovering well. I wanted to mention one other thing. Last week, somebody flagged for me a video from one of the state GOP chair Jeff Kaufman's recent speeches to a local Republican event. This one was in Jones County in eastern Iowa, and he really, I don't know how to describe it other than a rant. He spoke, he tends to get a pretty worked up when he speaks, and he got very angry talking about how he's really tired of hearing from people who don't know whether they want to vote for Donald Trump. And he said, basically, you picked a team and it's time to get with the team.
Wow. So it was like a Newt Rockne moment.
Yeah, it was. He was really frustrated. He started reminiscing about the 2016 campaign, where he had to listen to a lot of people's angst and not feeling like they wanted to vote for Trump. And he was like, "Come on, we've got look at all of the things that the current administration is doing." And so, like I said, he really, I mean, red-faced and angry. I mean, not
Wow.
just speaking with a somewhat raised voice.
I'll have to look for that. And what's going on with the Iowa Democratic Party?
So the Iowa Democratic Party is more on what I would call a normal convention schedule. They just held their congressional district level conventions. Their state convention is going to be in Des Moines on June 15th, which is around the usual time. I wanted to mention one thing that's gotten discussed a lot in Democratic circles. The Cedar Rapids Gazette columnist Todd Dorman recently interviewed the Iowa Democratic Party chair, Rita Hart, and she talked about how what it sounds like the Democratic Party's plans for this year will be really to campaign against what Rita Hart called the extreme Republican agenda. She mentioned the changes in the area education agencies that happened this year, the near total abortion ban, which isn't being enforced right now, but potentially could be enforced later this year, depending on what the Iowa Supreme Court decides, and the various efforts to change education policies, the efforts to ban school library books, and so on. And it sounds like that's going to be a primary focus of Democratic campaigns. One thing I did want to mention, the Iowa House Minority Leader Jennifer Confirst was on Iowa Public Television last week, and she did say that she was asked directly about running for governor, and she kind of said she's focused on winning back more state house seats this year, but she didn't rule out running for governor. I would say most Democrats are waiting to see what State Auditor Sand does. I think that if he runs for governor in 2026, then probably he won't have serious competition in the Democratic primary.
Interesting. So yeah, that'd be interesting, but that would probably give up that auditor slot as far as being a Democratic slot anymore if it wasn't him, huh?
Yeah, well, he was the first Democrat elected state auditor since the 1960s. So I
Wow.
think you would have to say that if it were an open seat race, that probably Republicans would be favored to win back that state auditor seat. We won't know anything until I think well into 2025 in terms of who's going to be running for governor. But that I think most people anticipate that it's something Rob Sand is at least seriously thinking about.
Okay, we've just got a little over 4 minutes left and shifting gears. There was an interesting Iowa Supreme Court ruling about open records recently, and it had a connection to you, Laura.
Yes, that we didn't have time to talk about this last week. This actually came down a week ago on Friday, and this also involves Rob Sand. The case is called Kirkwood v. Sand. The Kirkwood Institute, which is a conservative public interest law firm, had sued the state auditor's office over emails. The Kirkwood had filed a records request in the summer of 2021, and the emails that are at issue in the lawsuit are email chains involving me and also involving an Associated Press reporter. And the auditor's office turned over many emails, but they withheld 10 email chains. And so the Iowa Supreme Court basically, the district court had dismissed the lawsuit and had said the auditor's office properly withheld all of the emails that were not provided. And the Iowa Supreme Court sent the case back to the lower court and said, well, we think that there is a factual dispute here. So the lower court is going to consider whether one email chain was maybe excessively delayed, whether the other email chains, whether all of those are subject to exemptions in the open records law or exemptions in the state auditors, the law governing the state auditor's office, which forbids them from turning over information collected in the course of an audit. And so it'll be a long time before this is resolved, but it's going back to the lower court for further proceedings, and we'll see what happens. I felt that it was a very strong statement, again, from the Iowa Supreme Court, that they're very serious about government bodies complying with the open records law. And it follows, of course, last year's unanimous ruling in the open records case that was where I was one of the plaintiffs, where we had sued the governor's office. And that one was also sent back to lower court, but the state ended up settling with us in that case.
All right, 2 minutes left, Laura. Real quickly, what's going on with the Iowa Public Information Board's legislative committee?
Yeah, so they had a special meeting the Iowa Public Information Board did last Friday to talk about a bill that the legislature approved on the very last day of the session that the governor has not signed yet. So the governor, we don't know yet whether Governor Reynolds plans to sign or veto, but this was an open records and open meetings bill that was inspired by problems they had in Davenport last year. The main part of the bill would increase the penalties for government officials who violate the open records or open meetings law. But there was a last minute amendment that would say basically that government officials who attend certain types of events, political party or non-government organization events, that those would not be considered meetings that are subject to the open meetings law. And the Iowa Public Information Board has a lot of concerns about this language because while the intent may be so that, for instance, two or three members of a board of supervisors could attend a political party event, the way it was written, it might create a loophole where they could discuss government business at that kind of event. And that's not the intention. The intention of the law is that anywhere that government officials are discussing public business, so the majority of a board would be discussing the government business, that should be subject to open meetings requirements. So the Iowa Public Information Board was going to be sending a letter to the governor outlining their concerns about this. And depending on whether the governor signs it or not, they'll be one way or another, they'll be working with the legislature next year to fix what they view as a possible loophole.
You've been listening to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. We'll be back here next week at the same time to talk about the week in Iowa politics. Thank you for the privilege of your time.